Blog Talk Radio.
They forget to bring me water. They forget that I'm here. They don't know how smart. Even see my tears. What did I do wrong? What did I do? I just want someone to love me. Dog on a 10-foot chain.
Hello, everyone, and good evening, and welcome to Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Care for Animals, number 209 and counting, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is going, we're going to be rocking the airways again tonight for the animals. We are their voices. It must be heard, because without us, they don't have a chance to carry on, and their hope would be hopeless. So please, everyone, do what you can to help out. Get your voices out there. Get your signatures out there, your letters, your emails. You know, send faxes, make appointments with your legislators, because the animals do need us from every angle out there. The more action takers and voices, and hey, the faster the changes will be made. My name is Debbie Dahmer, and I am the producer and host for Voices Care for Animals, and I want to welcome everyone aboard, all you new listeners. Thank you for tuning in tonight, and I hope you keep coming back. All you returning listeners, thank you for all your ultimate support, getting the words out there, on this show. I just want to go a couple of things before we get started here. A big shout out to all these Facebook pages who continuously every Thursday help me to get the word out and promote this show. Take Action, Help Ban Animal Gas Chambers, Megan Mason and Holly Smith, thank you so much. Please visit their page. If you haven't already, press like and see how you can help out. I always multitask. I try to help as many as I can out, because there it's massive out there, massive problems that need to be in the spotlight. I noticed that animal rights is being put in the spotlight, rocking 2019 legislation, and I'm seeing so many victories coming through, or they're almost becoming victories, and that's good news for the animals. So a big standing ovation for that, and that takes all of us to come together as one and stand up and speak out for them. Their animal rights should be granted, not violated. Voice Care for Animals support group, I'm one of the admins there. I want to thank all the admins that's helping me out there. Big hello and thank you, for because I can't always be on there. The Paul's Call Show, thank you, the Paul's Call Show, with all you're doing. I'm on the admins. They assigned me to. Fans of Animal Rights on Facebook, Arlene and us, big staff there, thank you for helping me promote this show every Thursday. Help Fight the War Against All Animal Cruelty Today. Debbie Eisman and also Evelyn Pendle, I'm also one of the admins on there. Thank you for letting me join in. Voices for Animals on Facebook. A Voice for Animals on Twitter, Sean Walters, a big thank you to you also. Paul's Pet Foundation, Sam Diaz, thank you for all you're doing. He's been a former guest on here. Also, Paul's Across America Advocacy, Cecilia Maida, a big thank you to you, all the hard work you're doing Jennifer Nady. She's listening in tonight. Thank you, Jennifer, Animal Warrior Sister, Christina Marie Anderson, Jackie Starr. This list goes on. So, and her former guest on Animals Voices Care for Animals. And also big thank you to the Pitbull Advocate on Blog Talk Radio and also on the Facebook. Please visit their page, Patrick Bowler, a.k.a. Dog Father, Diane Lynn Echo, her also. She's admin on like 100 pages and groups on Facebook. She's out there being relentless. And thank you, Diane, for all you're going to Joe Frazier. I want to thank all the supporters of this show, all the followers on Facebook and Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn. Thank you all for all you're doing, the ones that's reposting this show and helping me out every Thursday, the family and friends. I love to give a shout-out to everyone because without all of you, this show would not be happening. A big huge thank you to Marty Oakley of the TS Radio Network, who helps out on this show also with the P from the PPJ Gazette Online Live. Just press listen live here, and it'll lead you to Blog Talk Radio. All shows are recorded live every Thursday and archived on Blog Talk Radio. So you can go to Blog Talk Radio, search Voices Care for Animals. You could also put my name in there, Debbie Dahmer, D-A-H-M-E-R, or you can put Animal Advocates Radio or TS Radio Network. And the PPJ Gazette, you could do the same on the right-hand column. You can subscribe, share each article from the bottom of the article to other social media sites. And also on Blog Talk Radio on the left side of the screen, the main promo, blogtalkradio.com/voices carry for animals. And under the logo, there is a follow button. Every time there's a podcast, it will be delivered to your primary email. So I want to go ahead and go on with the show. I'm going to take calls later on the show. And the number is area code 310-982-4270. Press 1, and I'll let you try to refrain from any noises in the background. TVs, radios, conversations, you're more than welcome to come on board because these animals are waiting for us to rock the airways for them. They so well deserve. So around 7:30, I'll be taking calls. So you're more free. You're more than welcome to call in with any comments or questions for the guests. I want to welcome back here Ashley Keith. She's been on Voices Carry for Animals number 161 on TS Radio Network. Marty Oakley, where I was the host. And also on Voices Care for Animals number 197, and that's on Animal Advocates Radio. And tonight, number 209, she's going to be joining us again. I want to welcome her back. She's out there working hard. We got some good news to report. What's going on with this humane mushing? And, you know, everybody get involved because the more voices, the more of us come together as one. The changes get to, you know, become faster, and they're hitting the victories. We're striving for victories. We don't want nothing to go backwards. We want to hit the victories and see some changes in the animals, especially thank us when their lives start to change for the better. And, you know, they can't thank us in person, but when it changes for them, they know it. But I want to welcome Ashley. Welcome back to Voices Carry for Animals. How are you doing this evening?
Thanks, Debbie. I'm doing good. How are you?
Hey, so far so good. I'm excited about having you back on here, just like all the other guests. You know, I love staying up and speaking out for the animals. But you want to go ahead and tell us, just refresh the audience, you know, how you got started, and we'll go ahead later with the your pages, your website, and Twitter. And explain humane mushing to the audience, please. Go right ahead. You're live and on the air.
All right, definitely. So I've had sled dogs for 21 years now. I've ran dogs all over the Midwest, New England. I also trained in Alaska. I've been to a number of industry kennels. I've worked for some Iditarod, Bear Grease, and Yukon Quest champions. And over time, I saw a lot of inherent cruelties in the sport that were just accepted as just a method of doing business. Extended tethering, mass production of dogs, culling, inhumane training. And eventually, after I went to Alaska in 2003, I couldn't support the industry anymore, and I started doing primarily rescue and humane mushing education. And what humane mushing is where you're dog sledding, but the animals are part of your family. They live in the house with you just like any other dog. They're not tied out to chains, and they get to enjoy like a normal life as well as going dog sledding. And today is actually the eve of a very exciting time, because last year we went to Iditarod to speak up for the dogs that are used in the industry up there, because in Alaska, sled dogs are exempt from the animal cruelty statutes, both on a state level and in many of the municipalities, they're even classified as livestock. So that's where we see a lot of sled dog abuse and neglect. It's like the Super Bowl of sled dog sports. And we went up last year and protested, and I got quite a bit of footage documenting just dog condition. There was an injured dog that started. I tried to get it help. Nothing happened. So we're doing that again this year, and I actually leave tomorrow, and I'm going to be meeting up with Fern, the director of the Sled Dogs documentary from Levitt, and we are going to head to Alaska, and we're meeting our friends from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals up there, and we're gonna do a protest again, and we're going to show the film, and I'm going to get more documentation, and we're going to see if we can approach more sponsors with the information that we gather. Right now, I've been working on a petition on change.org to get Alaska Air to drop, and as of, I can tell you how many signatures it's got right now. It had over 100,000 earlier. It's been going on for about. Yep, we've got 131,000. Well, it's going up as I sit here, but about 131,000 right now. We're trying to get to 150,000, and that's targeted toward Alaska Air. And actually, yesterday on the Iditarod's website, the Alaska Air logo got removed. And a smaller air company's logo got put on there, so we've reached out to them for comment, but haven't heard back yet. So keep your fingers crossed.
Yes, definitely. Wow. And
that would be.
Ashton, do you have the name on the change.org petition? Do you have? Could you give the audience the name of it? And after the show, if you can, I'm going to add that to the promos. You know, because they're all archived on the PPJ Gazette. And also Blog Talk, so I can add it to there too. You know, to get past
definitely. The title of it is Alaska Airlines: Stop Abusing Dogs for Profit, or Stop Abusing Dogs for Sport, rather. So if you search anything with Alaska Airlines, it should come up. But it's Alaska Airlines: Stop Abusing Dogs for Sport, and we're trying to get up to 150,000 before Iditarod starts. If you guys can. Sign it, share it. We're just gonna keep going hard. We recently had a victory Coca-Cola drop, and earlier in the year Jack Daniels dropped. So,
yes.
Huh?
I said that was awesome. Thank you, Coca-Cola. Yes.
I know, right? And Jack Daniels dropped as well earlier, so now we can enjoy Jack and Coke again.
Yep. Oh, there's another one. So it's going. You know, we're. Got a long road ahead, but we will reach this destination all in good time. You can't give up, Ashley. We have to keep on. Under no circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
This is good.
And, we're definitely being heard. This year is the smallest field of mushers starting the Iditarod in 22 years. This is the least amount of people that signed up. A number of the sponsors, there's a lot of holes on their sponsorship page. It's just, I mean, they're definitely feeling the pressure from the animal welfare and the animal rights communities that what they're doing with the dogs is not okay. And more people are starting to realize that. And just the fact that so few mushers signed up, and last year a number of them, like Didi Genro, for example, who've been running it forever, announced that they're retiring. And, I mean, I just really feel that we're being heard, and we can't give up. We have to keep plugging away at it. And with everything on social media now, it helps a lot, because a lot of people who wouldn't have seen it before, or who wouldn't have had any idea, who've never been to Alaska or never been to a dog lot, we can bring them those pictures and show them, and we can show them the video of how the dogs live. And on Saturday, at the ceremonial start in Anchorage, I'll be live streaming. I'll be posting photos, but I'll also be live streaming for a portion of it. And then on Sunday, I'll be live streaming from the Willow Restart, which is where the dogs get trucked to and they actually start the 1,000-mile journey, because you can't run straight out of Anchorage. Anchorage is just the ceremonial start. So this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, on the Humane Mushing Facebook page, I will be showing everything and live streaming. So if you're not familiar with dog sledding, or industrial dog sledding at least, and the Iditarod, you can see through my eyes just exactly what's going on up there, the type of conditions the dogs are in. We've already posted some pictures that mushers have taken, or that people up there have sent us, of the conditions of dogs at the vet checks. And a lot of the dogs are what even people in sports would consider far too thin. They burn about 10,000 to 12,000 calories a day running Iditarod, and these dogs just don't have the weight on them to burn. So it's kind of nerve-wracking seeing what's going to happen to these dogs, but we'll see if they're there on the start line on Sunday. A number of them did pass vet check, so we're waiting to see how that pans out. But they're not what you would think of when you picture an athletic animal. Or a dog that likes to do a job. I mean, you've got their hip bones and their back bones and the ribs are so prominent, and it's different when they're muscled and you can see shadows of those. But to have them be so prominent to being near emaciated is what we're seeing. So that's what we're finding really disturbing, and what I'm likely going to be showing you guys on Saturday and Sunday.
And just to think, you know, these animals feel what we feel, you know, the coldness or the hotness, and, you know, being out there on chains. And it is just like that song at the beginning, actually, from Don Hughes. She's been on the show several times. She gave me permission to run that show, you know, whenever I wanted. And dog on a 10-foot chain, and you see them, and it's like they're calling out for us that they're uncomfortable. They're not at peace. They're stressing, you know, and it's so sad. I mean, I've seen the photos and the videos, and it's so gut-wrenching that something needs to be done. We all need to keep this up to get rid of it. They don't need to be on sleds. Let them live comfortable and peace. You know, we're not all on this earth permanent. We're all here temporary. So together... Mm-hmm. You know, we share this earth, so we want all of us, we the people, or we the humans, want to live comfortably, you know, and have all of our rights, and so do the animals. But they just can't speak out and fight for themselves, you know, and that's the sad part. So whatever it takes, and actually we have a call, area code 530. You want to take some calls right now? It's up to you.
Sure.
Okay, area code 530, Animal Advocates Radio. Welcome aboard, Voices Care for Animals. Go right ahead. You're live and on the air. This is Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome on the show.
Hello, ladies. Hi. Again,
she's
like always, can't stay away. Can't stay away.
That's fine. That's beautiful.
Yes, yep. Well, thanks for having me on as a caller. I just had to call in and give major kudos to Ashley and her relentless, hardcore, nonstop battle for these sled dogs. They are often not really, I mean, you don't a lot of times see them in the forefront of the animal advocacy world, but what Ashley and Fern and PETA have been doing is bringing that to light, like, in people's face, and that it needs to happen, because I wouldn't have known otherwise. Just like Ashley was saying, with the blessing of social media and being able to share this material that, you know, Ashley Collect puts together and you know, what Fern has put together, I mean, so many people wouldn't know otherwise. It was a huge eye-opener for me. I had no clue. I mean, growing up, I heard, yeah, the Iditarod, okay, you know, that's cool, you know, the sled dogs or whatever. But I had no idea the suffering and the cruelty that was behind this industry. So, so thank you so much, Ashley, for doing this and going up there, you know, to call out what goes on in the background up there at the Iditarod. What, 'cause you're mentioning certain things that you're doing. What is your itinerary look like? I mean, as far as each day, I mean, because I know they have the starting of the race, but like what happens in between? So you're going to be going around and taking, of course, footage. Have you done any very many interviews with locals on how they feel about things and you guys being there? I mean, are they like upset at you very much? Do you get ill-treated by some of the locals for speaking out? Because I know it's a livelihood. The Iditarod brings a lot of tourists and a lot of money. And, you know, when you tamper with people's pocketbook, they kind of get upset.
Yeah, I mean, last year, of course, being out at the ceremonial start and protesting, we did get quite a bit of negative feedback, obviously, because, like you said, it's people's livelihoods that we're affecting in some respects. And some other people, honestly, they grew up there and they just think that it's normal. They don't. They've never been taught any different, and they don't know that all the animals are out there and that some of the dog kennels have 200, 300 dogs just chained out there and that they're rotating in and they're just mass breeding. Some of them are supportive. We actually have a number of people that'll send us photos and correspond with us and let us know what's going on throughout the year. But,
yeah, because I was going to ask that. It's like, how many locals realize that these kennels are out there? Because most of the time, they're tucked away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, how many of even the locals know about the suffering involved? So,
I mean, I don't think that a lot of them do. I think that it's a much smaller amount that are really aware of it, that have actually gone out and been to the kennels and seen them. Because all you usually see is what the mushers in the media show you, which is
right.
The dogs running and the race start and everything.
Have you had any locals turn around, like be, negative at first, and have they, any of them turned around in their view when you've showed them the kennels and how they live? Have they changed their perspective on how they viewed it?
There were a couple last year when we did the sled dog showing. They were very upset because they thought that we were going after, like, native mushers who use dogs for transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And both Fern and I pointed out that's not what we're trying to end, is native use of sled dogs. We're trying to end industrialized use of sled dogs. And once we actually sat down, I mean, because they were heated, and
mm-hmm.
once we actually explained that and we're like, there's a very large difference between the two, that they kind of backed off. I don't think they came around, but I think they saw a little bit more clearly what our goal was, and that they weren't something that we were necessarily going after. So, I mean,
right.
I think we did have some success there, yeah. And we're doing another showing of sled dogs on Saturday again at 4 o'clock in the library. So hopefully we'll have even more people this year that are just curious or haven't seen it and want to know.
Yeah. One thing when you're when the show first started, I was thinking, I've been to wonder when, since you've been in the industry for so long, when did either you see or in your research that you've done, when did you start seeing the transition of the typical thick, you know, heavy-coated Husky Malamute dogs as sled dogs? When did you start seeing that transition to the lean, you know, gaunt sled dogs that they use, you know, they breed just for speed, obviously not endurance, to handle the cold and the length of the Iditarod? It's all about speed at the expense of dogs dropping off on the side because they can't handle it. When did you see that start happening? Because I think when with the serum run back when they, you know, when initially started and had its beginnings, those, I, from my recollection, those were pretty sturdy, heavy-coated dogs, weren't they?
Most of the teams that are actually noted, I actually just did research for this for somebody the other day. Most of the teams were actually Malamutes or Siberians. The teams like Leonard Sepala's team were Siberians. Gunnar Kasson's team was Siberians. Most of the other ones that were in there, it either listed how many dogs they had or specifically that they had 7 to 11 Alaskan Malamutes. So a lot of them were the traditional breeds. When I started in Siberian. So, I mean, I started with a traditional breed. But I think even back when I started in 1998 that people were already breeding breeding Euro Hounds, which is like the Alaskan Husky Hound version. They were already sort of switching over to that, because I remember meeting people with dogs like that early on once I got out of just the purebred circle and started visiting more kennels of Alaskan Husky Mushers. There were some Alaskans at the Siberian kennel that I worked at, and they were definitely shorter coat, kind of houndy, big ears. And I mean, so I think that it's been going on for a while, but I mean, the point to which it is now is just alarming. Like, there's so few typical Nordic breeds that are being used. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really supportive of the World Sled Dog Organization and why I think they have such a better environment for sled dogs over there, is because they have to be FCI registered. They have to be purebred Nordic dogs in order to compete. And I think that that's part of what we've gotten away from here, is any sort of registry, health testing, any sort of accountability. People are just breeding in whatever they want to get the fastest dog.
Yeah, and to me, that in itself right there points out that it's about the money, and it's about winning. It's obvious to have such gaunt dogs to pull your sled that can barely, you know, I mean, they can't handle these extreme temperatures. That's, to me, that just shows complete selfishness on the side of, you know, of the mush of these racers, that it's not about the, you know, the endurance of how, what the dogs can handle long term. I mean, it's purely speed to win, and at the expenses of the dogs. And that just, to me, that just screams, you know, absolute self-centered purpose for what they're doing. A lot
of the dogs now in Iditarod, they can't run without booties, without jackets, like physical jackets.
Yeah.
They can't run without gastric ulcer medication on board because they're being run so hard and so fast under so much stress that it's a regular occurrence for them to get bleeding stomach ulcers that's a large cause of fatality if they're not pre-treated for it. So dogs running the Iditarod and the Quest literally just live on gastric ulcer medication.
Oh, man.
So that way, and that's part of what they attributed Boppy's death to last year, not this year, but the year before in the Quest, Hugh's dog, because he wasn't on, I mean, he had a ton of problems, but one of the ones that they pointed out was he wasn't on gastric ulcer medication. And it's sad that you should have to give your animal a preventative like that just for it to function.
Yeah, like that's not normal.
But you know, but it is in the industry. It is normal. It's become something that's normal. And I remember when the first gastric ulcer study came out, and I was like, oh, maybe this will change things. But no, people just were like, okay, well, this is what we're causing, so we just have to medicate against it. And they just kept going, which was really
tough. Yeah, that's just, it's just not, it's not natural. It's conditioning. You know, it's like, well, they start getting conditioned to what's normal, what's acceptable. And, like, that video the other day, I don't know if, do you mind maybe explaining a little bit about that clip the other day about them, you know, people saying that the system, the Husky sled dog internal system is so different than other dogs that they have just the endurance of basically Hercules, like they could just go on indefinitely. So justifying the you know, pushing them in these Iditarod races. Can you explain a little bit of like where that's coming from, where that data is coming from?
I mean, I watched the YouTube video when it came out, and I've read the studies that they've done on Iditarod dogs and on Quest dogs from the Finnemark race. I mean, they are more able to do the job than other dogs, but that's just like border collies are more able to do their job than other dogs because of how they're built and how they're bred. But in no way are they what the industry is trying to point them out as is immune. I mean, if everything in there was what the mushers wanted it to be and they're these superheroes, then they wouldn't have to be on gastric ulcer medication. Then they wouldn't be wearing dog coats the entire time they're running. Then they wouldn't be wearing booties the entire time they're running. They wouldn't be on all these, like, feeding sled dogs now, like, for competitions like this and training up to it is just insane because of all the supplements and all the additives and everything you have to give the dog to keep its system from collapsing, all the different supplements and everything is just, to function.
To function,
and dogs, and even with all this stuff, dogs still die. Dogs still drop. Every time you see a dog team that dropped, quote-unquote, because of the mushers' concern for the team, everybody's like, oh, like, they're clapping for that person. And if you actually look at, like, those mushers' pages or talk to those mushers' handlers or look at photos of those teams when they come into the checkpoint, it's because those dogs look like garbage and those dogs are starting to go, and they need them pulled from the race. And one musher told me that years ago, that's how they went a couple years without any deaths, is because as soon as the dogs looked like they were at all having trouble, they pulled them, because if they're off the race clock, they don't have to report it. So as soon as they pulled them, it was 24 or 48 hours out. So who knows how many actually die as a result of the race. We just hear about the ones that die on the race clocks going either into checkpoints or getting transported out of checkpoints to somewhere else while they're still technically in possession of the Iditarod trail committee. So, they've been putting that video around a lot, but it's not what they want it to be. It's not actually what they'd like it to be.
Yeah, that's just trying to endorse their agenda.
Call. Jennifer, you can stay on air. Callers. Area code 416. You're live and on air. Welcome to Animal Advocates Radio. Voices carry for animals. Go right ahead. Do you have any comments or questions for the guests, please? Go right ahead. Can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
I can hear
you. Thank you. Yes.
Oh, can you hear me? Ashley, it's Leanne.
Hi, Leanne.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi,
Leanne. Good, how are you?
Good. Okay, so I'm calling from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We have the same problem here in Canada, and it's not just, you know, our version of the Iditarod is the Yukon Quest, but we have all these dog sledding facilities here that it's just the mode of operation of these places. They're all operating the same way. They all keep their dogs outdoors 24/7, chained their whole lives, attached to either a plastic barrel or a wooden house, and a lot of them are not even up to code for the Ontario SPCA standards, but unfortunately, sled dogs here are considered they even have less rights than regular dogs, and I mean, I was appalled about a year ago, a couple went dog sledding, and they had a video that went viral, and these the conditions these dogs are kept in, like Ashley said, they're emaciated. They don't get medical attention. They don't get vet care. They're chained their whole lives. A lot of them freeze to death. And I just can't believe, I was shocked that this is going on in modern society in my own province. It was jarring, completely like mind-blowing, and just, I still haven't recovered.
And the thing that's crazy about that, revolting, too, with the Windrift footage, is they let people into their, they were doing tours with the dogs in that condition, and people post photos of their own dogs in that condition. Like, to them, there's nothing wrong with the dogs being in that condition, and that's the most terrifying part, is they honestly, like, deep down, they don't see that it's wrong, which is a whole nother
issue.
Yeah,
and the fact
itself,
that the public, and the fact that the public can look at that and it doesn't even register. It's like, hello, are you not seeing what I'm seeing? I mean, it's not normal. I mean, it's not normal to treat an animal like a motor to transport people or to pull tourists around 4 months of the year and let them rot at the end of a chain the other 8 months. I mean, how is that in any way civilized or normal? It's just, what are people thinking?
I don't know. Yeah,
like,
I mean, and so many...
We've got to get rid of this whole industry. There's no way of justifying it or making it all right or improving it. I mean, I'm not against recreational mushing. I'm not against a family or people that have a few dogs and they go out sledding. I'm not one of those crazy PETA people that I'm banishing anybody from owning a goldfish or, you know... There's some crazy myths out there that, you know, people that, you know, even support PETA, if they're not PETA members, but they admire their work, we all want to, like, banish pet ownership, which is ridiculous. I'm fine with, like, recreational mushers that, you know, they have a few dogs, they stay in the home with the family, they're not kept out in extreme weather, and they get veterinary attention, and they're not chained. I mean, chaining is the number one common denominator amongst all these places and all these mushers that are bad. The chain is the number one thing.
Well, these big kennels, it's like you can't humanely keep 200-plus dogs in one place humanely.
No.
I mean, unless you are mega wealthy and you have, like, basically, like, talking to Ashley, a sanctuary, you know, that you have stables, you know, dog stables and huge running areas, and, you know, it's just, and that's why they keep them that way. It's cheap and easy.
Mm-hmm.
And convenient. Yep.
Yep, it's a lazy way to keep a lot of dogs.
It is. And they'll tell you that, too. They'll tell you that that's the easiest way to monitor each dog's bowel movements and whether or not each dog's eating. And I'm like, I'm able to monitor those things because I spend time with my dogs. I'm like, normal people can monitor those things. Like, if you have too many dogs to monitor those things, then you have too many dogs.
Yeah. It always kills me when people say, well, you know what? I just have so many dogs. I have to keep them outside because I can't have them in the house. It's like, well, how about having not so many dogs then?
Yeah.
That's a simple answer there.
It's called hoarding.
Yeah, it is. Like, that's what I would like to know. I would like to know where the line blurs between having some dogs and hoarding. Because when you've got 200 dogs and also you're only using 20 of them for your business, and what about the other 80? Like, isn't that hoarding practices?
You'd think so.
Yeah,
it's like, I think, don't they cycle them, don't they, Ashley? Weren't you saying they cycle them around? Because when you have that many dogs, you can keep, like, rotating them? Is that what you were saying?
You can, and they'll use them for different things. Like Stevie's have so many between their family that they'll use some for touring, some for glacial tours, some for cruise ship tours, numerous teams for Iditarod, teams in the Finnmark. Like, it's just, there's different things that they'll do with each of them. But a lot of them, like the one that I saw when I was up there that Mitch got rid of, was literally just languishing there. And that's the problem, is the older dogs either sit there and languish until they're dispatched, or they're just dispatched even when they're younger. And when I was up there,
is that true?
We had probably Go ahead.
I was going to say, is that true that they breed them and breed them and breed them? I heard a quote from a musher who's dead now. I think it's Susan Butcher. And she said that she had to breed 300 dogs to get 5 good racers. And there was a woman, Ethel, who was head of the SPCA of Alaska, and she said, you would not believe how much culling goes on here. And it is because they breed so much, and they drown them, they put a rock around their neck, they put them in the lake, but they kill all these puppies, even if they walk funny, because
it's just
they
the pick of the litter
racers.
Is all they want. They just want the pick of the litter,
and
just batch the ones that they don't want.
And, I mean, a lot of the larger industry kennels, they do. They breed a lot of litters of puppies every summer. But now I think that it's not as noticeable because people that are consistently running Iditarod, they'll sell dogs that aren't making the cut on their team. There's a larger market for them now because it's become so much more industrialized. And with the Internet, somebody in Minnesota could buy a cull from Alaska for a couple $100 and get it shipped down there. But also, if you watch the Fairbanks Animal Shelter page, Fairbanks North Star Animal Burrow, in the last couple weeks, there have been so many sled dogs abandoned and dumped there because it's the time between the quests and the Iditarod. So all the quest teams are getting rid of the dogs that didn't cut it.
It's time to clean house, I guess, right?
Yeah, and the dogs that aren't making the cut for Iditarod are going there. And I actually sat the other day, it took me hours,
terrible.
And I went all the way through their timeline and saved all the pictures of all the sled dogs that have ended up there. And there's Iditarod dogs. I have Ken Anderson a couple of years ago dumped 4 dogs there, and I actually totaled up his Iditarod winnings. And I'm like, these dogs earned him this, and this is what they get. This is where they are now. And it's just
despicable.
And, I mean, yeah. And
isn't it true that this race would not be able to be held in anywhere else other than Alaska because of the fact, and how convenient is it for them, that those animals have no rights there? So you are allowed to push them past the limit, and you are allowed to drive them to their death. Is that not true?
Yeah, because in other states there's laws against overworking and overdriving your animal, and in Alaska sled dogs are exempted from those laws because they're exempted from the cruelty statutes.
Right,
but
so that's the perfect place to run your dog to death is in Alaska, right? You won't get arrested.
Yep.
That's why we need something
nice.
So badly, both in Canada, both here in the U.S., we need something more, you know, federal with higher standards. I was just telling Ashley earlier before the show began, I found an article. I think it's older, but from, I think, 2015, but where New Zealand added to their Animal Welfare Act, they added that animals are sentient beings,
yep.
And that should be in any country that cares a scrap about their animals overall in a civilized country should adopt something like that. I mean, New Zealand is a pretty good-sized country, and they seem to be pretty, you know, progressive. So it's like, what's up with Canada and the U.S.? Why can't we add something along those lines?
I mean, actually, Toronto did just pass a municipal bylaw in 2017 that says you can only tether or chain your dog up for an hour. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You can no longer than an hour unattended.
That's not too bad.
Progress.
Considering, yeah. Yeah, that's not too
bad.
And
if we can extend that provincially, then that means that these places will not be able to operate the way they do now if they can't chain their dog up for longer than an hour.
Well, and that's a big part of what we fight is that most areas, a lot of times why you can't get tethering, anti-tethering laws and standards for outdoor companion animals is they are considered property. They are a commodity. And so by a country like New Zealand saying they're sentient and can have feelings, that's huge. And that can help as we approach to get laws passed for protection. So
you wouldn't think that was a rocket science that you would have to convince people that dogs that actually have feelings and can feel pain. And
especially in 2019, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Exactly.
I think we have another caller.
Yes, everyone can stay on air, okay? I'm gonna bring this caller, and we got a big audience here tonight again, so that's a big plus. Thank you, audience out there listening in, and you can listen in worldwide, unlimited listeners here. Anybody wants to call in, 310 area code 982-4270. And a big shout out to my mother who's listening tonight. Hi, Mom. My beautiful mom inside now, or AKA Moose. Love
Puppy
you.
Says.
So, area code 361, you're live and on air. Go right ahead. Do you have any comments or questions for the guests, please?
Yeah, hello, my name's Carla. I'm calling from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Hi, Carla.
Surprisingly, I was just listening to your tethering about the tethering. Actually, here in Texas, they've actually come a long way. They've actually, our city ordinance here in Corpus Christi, you're not allowed to have your animal chained up outside without a tether for more than 3 hours. And they have a, yeah, and if the temperature falls below 32 degrees, they have to bring it inside, which is a good thing. Texas is actually coming a lot farther, and I'm calling in to give an update on a wonderful case here. It's an awful case, but it's turning into a wonderful case. Back January 5th of last year, we had an animal cruelty case that I was there, called animal control, 5 puppies kept in a 36-inch cage for the entire 5 months of their life.
Terrible.
Horrific, horrific. You can go to Norway's page, and you can see the updates on the case. But they indicted the lady, 5 felonies for each puppy, third-degree felonies. Our court date is going to be April 29th.
Awesome.
So it's a
awesome.
Huge, huge animal cruelty victory here for this case.
That's wonderful. Well,
yeah,
done.
And you know, and like
well
you,
done,
and then you said, being like saying, you know, being animals treated as property, that's what they're treated like here in Texas. And unfortunately, we're really pushing to make that law a little bit different, more defined, more, you know, not so vague. If it wasn't been for Norway's help interpreting the laws to our detective here, this case would have only been charged with 1 Class A misdemeanor.
Wow.
They did a great job, and it was a whole team effort here, you know, with the animal control, the police department, Norway, you know, my assistants with collecting evidence for them. I mean, it was great and stuff, you know, and like I said, the laws of tethering are so awful, and, you know, that people, like I said, with property, they don't think they can be held accountable for this stuff.
Well, and you said, too often the laws regarding chaining and tethering are so vague. I mean, that's what we're working right now in California. It's like it just says appropriate, you know, proper shelter,
right?
Proper food.
Right.
It's like, well, proper is so. I mean, anyone could interpret proper. Well, it's proper. It's like no,
exactly.
You
got
to spell it out
exactly.
for people.
Exactly, and that's the hard thing is so that you know our city, you know, they put me on the animal advisory committee, which helped with redoing our ordinances. So we're going through ordinance one by one to get them rechanged, worded better, to where the owners know what's responsible of them, and the city knows what they can do to these people if they don't want to comply.
Well, that's awesome.
And it's good.
It's also great because it gives the neighbors and the people around there who have to witness the abuse at least somewhere to go, because sometimes it's just as abusive to be the person who has to witness this.
Yeah,
right. And that's the hard thing is that people that are witnesses sometimes they don't want to speak up. They're afraid.
Yeah, they're scared.
And that's why you have people
especially
like me.
Yeah, that they live next door to the person, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, they're afraid of retaliation. But you know, like I said, with my case, I drove right to the location, and I called
that's
animal
awesome.
Control right from that location. They were monitoring the Facebook posts. They knew I was calling. And it was so smooth that, you know, not every case goes like this. And I get messages from all over the nation, people asking, how did you do this? How did this case happen? And I kind of give them an outline on what I did, how to do it, the proper way. The problem is people don't like to wait. And this
is they want instant gratification. Well, and a big part of what, like Ashley with the sled dogs, that she and, you know, anyone advocating for these dogs, like she said, they are considered working dogs like hounds.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
The first instance that I've seen where an ordinance, a statute has passed including working dogs was in Rhode Island by Pat Serpa, Representative Pat Serpa. I was telling Ashley this the other day.
That's the key, a representative.
That's
the key, getting your representatives.
that has spearheaded that issue, because as you see probably most of the time, the hunters, the ranchers, and all the outdoors mm-hmm. people in that big ag come in and they exempt all their working
yes.
dogs, all their hounds, and that includes the sled dogs. And so that's
yes.
why so they're not protected.
Yes,
so,
and that's, like I said, the key is getting your people, voting your people in on your legislature that are for your animals, that are animal lovers. That's the key, because they're going to be the ones that are going to push it, and your advocates are going to support them. But it's getting
right.
the word out to your advocates, who is for our animals, who's going to make those changes. And then that's, you know, it's a gamble we play, trying to
right.
get them in there. But we have the power to vote them back out.
Right.
You know, that's the key, so.
I was just going to say that I do think it starts with the chaining, because that is just like,
yeah.
I said to Ashley, I think that's the one common denominator that all these different fields have in common is that chain. That's
yeah.
how they all warehouse their dogs, you know?
Yep,
yeah.
And that's true. That is true. But I just want to call and give an update on the case. Like I said, hopefully, Debbie, you guys will have another show maybe sometime of how I can voice it out and how I did this and the process to help
yes.
other people across the nation help,
I'd love
to, you know, get
that.
These people. Yeah, get
well
people
done.
Convicted, you know, do that stuff. So let me know if you'd like to do a show. I will call in at any time.
Woo-hoo.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
Carl,
bring you on.
Yes,
in.
Thank you. You'll have,
and,
yes,
and
you'll have a great
you
evening. Thank you.
In. Okay.
Thanks oh, all the time.
You.
All the time. All right. Thank
all
right. you.
Awesome, Carla.
Bye-bye.
And, Ashley, I want to, if you could give the audience your, you know, website and also your Facebook page and the Twitter, if you could, please.
Yeah, definitely. So for the Twitter, it's @humane_mushing, so humane_mushing. The Twitter's a little different. It's humane.mushing. And then the website is just www.humanemushing.com. And if you type Humane Mushing in on Facebook, you'll find us really easy. We just hit 1,500 followers. And you can look me up if you want. It's Ashley Keith. Or you can just contact me right from Humane Mushing. It has push notifications, so it goes directly to my phone no matter what. And if you're interested in seeing what goes on this weekend, then I would say definitely give us a follow on the Facebook page. That's definitely where most of the live stuff goes and where our biggest audience is, and we get the most traction, so that's where we'll be posting a lot of stuff. So if you guys are interested in following along with the adventure over the next couple days, I leave
best
tomorrow.
Best of luck, Ashley. You and Fern, best of luck. You guys kick some patootie over there.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing Fern again. And
yay.
It's our little once a year gig that we do. So, I mean, I'm really hoping. I've got a lot of ideas after thinking over last year. And I hope to get a lot more footage and figure out a lot more stuff about which dogs are which and everything when I'm getting photos of them. And just hoping to get a lot more to show people to hopefully bring the truth to their eyes. So
well, and hopefully one day soon you and Fern can
we
get together
to
for fun and not for
yep.
having to fight this fight. That'll be a real vacay.
Hey Jennifer, while yes. you're on air, can you, because you're out there hard, you know, doing the hard fight too, and you're relentless, and a big
oh,
shout out
goodness.
To you with all you're doing for the animals, but can you give the audience your, because she's been a guest on this show several times for Paws Across America, Advocacy, Unchained, it's Unchained. Did you want to give that information out, please?
Sure. From my end, I'm actually directing the National Anti-Chain Campaign or Anti-Chain Division of the Anti-Dog Fighting Campaign Worldwide Organization. You can find us on Facebook, but also we have a supportive group called Canine Unchained USA, where we basically use it, and Ashley's there as well. She's helps us out directing there and in the group. Basically, a place to raise awareness of all types of chaining and people pushing to pass laws in their areas as we're working. Ultimately, we're hoping to push for something federal. We had a spot bill to update California's tethering bill, to be in no unattended tethering.
The hallway. It's okay.
Oh, okay. And but unfortunately, the spot bill, it expired because we couldn't find an author. But we're not giving up. We're continuing to push forward and getting more evidence together of many dogs in California that continue to suffer. So we're just going to keep networking and building this case. So we're hoping this next year's legislative session we can come back stronger with more data and hopefully find an author for this next year. And so we'll see how it goes, but that's kind of where we're standing right now. So, yeah, so both the Anti-Dogfighting Campaign Worldwide Organization and Canine Unchained USA is both on Facebook. And I'm excited, though, where Ashley is there in Colorado. They have a new, very pro-animal governor. And Ashley was talking about organizations, husky and sledding organizations that are working with their new governor, and super excited to hoping there's some improved legislation to include sled dogs there in Colorado. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed and our ears tuned for maybe what Ashley might bring up else along the way for the dogs in Colorado.
That's awesome.
First, you'll be coming back on, and also Ashley, I'd love to have all my guests come back on again and again because there's no limit, so I'd like to know
it's
the
ongoing.
Progress and seeing so many guests, former guests, get together or working together. I mean, seeing them together,
teamwork.
Teamwork is the key. And see them going, hanging out together, working together, going through newsfeed, and it is awesome. I mean, there's nothing better than that can get. And Erica, the lady from Toronto, what's your first name? I know you got
Leanne.
Leanne, thank you for calling in this evening.
Okay, and I just want to say, Ashley, all the luck up there, and just try and have a good time, and try and get your point across, and I'm sure you will, and. I'm just stoked for you, and I know that being up there is going to make a difference, and that's what really matters. It's going to make a big difference.
Well, thank you.
Awareness is where it's at.
And we're still keeping our eyes out and whenever we can possible to help make change up there in Canada as well.
That's
right. There's another
for
one.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
And thank you. And thank you. And
I'm
going to
sign off. I'll call next time, okay?
But have a great evening.
Nice talking, Leanne.
Ladies,
we've got a couple minutes here
left. I want to really thank you, Ashley Keith. She's the founder of Humane Mushing, Animal Advocate at Sled Dog Action Coalition. Thank you for coming on air again tonight and looking forward to having you back on again and again. And best of luck for you in this weekend, and please keep us in touch. You can call in the show, give us an update, and can't wait to have you back. I mean, and Jennifer, thank you for calling in tonight. And you're relentless, just like the rest of us, Animal Warrior sister. We have
to be hardcore.
That's right. We are better together than apart. So. The more voices out there, everyone, and action takers, call your state legislators, area code 202-224-3121. They'll ask for your zip code, and then tell them to please connect you with your senator or your representative. And you can, try to be professional and polite to get your word across. So I want
to keep our eyes peeled, Ashley. We'll keep our eyes peeled on Humane Mushing and your page so we can see all the goings
on. Thanks so much for having me on, Debbie, and thanks for calling in like always, Jen. I appreciate the support.
Oh, absolutely.
So
hey, we're in this together, and we're gonna make the change, right?
I know.
We are
eventually. We're doing it.
All for our precious puppers.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Carla, for calling in tonight. Leanne, thank you for calling in from Toronto. All you listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. The same numbers for every week, and you can listen by phone. You can even Skype in, area code 310-982-4270. Press 1 and to speak, and I'll let you in. And all these shows are recorded live and archived on Blog Talk Radio. www.blogtalkradio.com/voicescarryforanimals. And you can share and listen 24/7, 365 days a year from the left side of the screen. And also on the PPJ Gazette, Marty Oakley. Thank you, Marty Oakley. You created a big monster radio advocate. So, everyone, I hope you enjoyed the show. Please take action. And we'll see you next week with Grace Hamlin, the W Underdog. She's been on the show before. And they're down in Georgia. So hope you tune in next week, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, and 4 o'clock Pacific. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice and peaceful evening, and may God bless you all. Good night,
Thanks,
Mom.
Ladies.
Good
Have a great night. Debbie. Good luck, night. Ashley.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye,
Thanks,
Ashley.
Debbie.
Thank you so much. And Jennifer.
Yep.
All
Marla.
Right.
And yes, Leanne. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.